affecting one way or another, and so it's a topic that touches all of us. And you start thinking about all of the things that all of the passages we have in the Bible about money, whether it's somebody using their possessions in a good way or a bad way, versus just about money, and you know specifically or what have you. There's just a ton of them. We're going to take a snippet of those and look at the back. I've got a green light, Donald.
That sounds like it's working.
Okay, sorry about that, everybody. Philippians chapter 4. So what we want to do is just take a few of these verses about material possessions, put them together in some practical ways so that we can think about principles regarding our use of money and material things. Here's the first point we want to talk about. You can't chase contentment. You have to learn it. Philippians chapter 4. One of my favorite passages here is from the Apostle Paul, verses 11 and 12. He says, "Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along and with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need." Okay, so in verse 11, notice the word learned. I've learned how to be content. You don't get contentment by having a certain amount of money. You can't chase contentment and find it. It's not out there somewhere. It's inside. It's in the heart. And so contentment is not a dollar amount. It's a character trait. It's something I develop. Just like Paul, I'm trying to learn how to be content. A fellow named Hyman Satchel said, "Happiness is not having what we want, but wanting what we have." Look in 1 Timothy chapter 6, please. One of the other great passages we have about money is 1 Timothy 6. And I want to just kind of march through some of these verses, give them time to sink in a little bit. And we'll start in verse 6. 1 Timothy 6:6, "But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either." So we can't take it with us. Here's, you know, we use this. We have to use money. We have to use some sort of material goods to survive on earth. It's a material world. We're using these things. That's how we survive. We have to use it in some capacity. But we also recognize we just use it while we're here, and then it's gone. You know, we're going to leave our physical bodies. We're going to leave this earth, and it's gone, and you can't take it with you. As my dad used to say, you never see a U-Haul behind a hearse. You can't take it with you. You know, we're using it while we're here, and then it's gone. It's not part of my eternal existence. Verse 8, "If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content." Okay, think about all the stuff that's not included in that verse. He just says food and covering. With those we'll be content. You know, he doesn't even mention Wi-Fi or phones or TVs or, you know, all that stuff. He just said food and covering. We can be content with that. Verse 9, "But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction." Okay, did he say the rich fall into temptation? Those who want to get rich. Those who desire to be rich, the ESV says. Same thing in verse 10. "For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." So money itself is not the problem. We're all using it, but it's our attitude toward money. And by the way, that's whether you have it or not. Whether you have a bunch of money or you don't have a bunch of money. The point there is the love of money and those who want to get rich. You know, you might be one level of rich, you want to get richer. And so that attitude towards money is what the Bible's talking about here. So, you know, I can be guilty of violating verse 10 if I have hardly any money. But it's the love of money that's root of all sorts of evil. I might be obsessed with it. I might be obsessed with getting it. And because of that, all of these things are going to take place. You know, I don't read my Bible, but I read every financial website I can find. And I never somehow find time to pray unless it involves money. And I'm praying, "Lord, please help this investment work out." You know, so my life is just focused on money. Whether I've got it or I don't, that's what it's focused on. Jump down to verse 17. "Instruct those who are rich." So now it is talking about people who are rich. "Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy." Okay, so now it's talking about someone who's actually rich, but it's the same basic instruction. Don't put your hope in money. And so he's telling them, use this money in a way that glorifies God. He says in verse 18, instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. Okay, so put your hope in God. So 1 Timothy 6 shows us that whether we have money or not, it's our attitude toward money that Paul is warning Timothy and others about. Let me pause there. We've looked at Philippians 4, 1 Timothy 6 so far. Any comments, any questions so far about contentment, sir?
I'm sure a lot of us have seen the videos of the people that have come to the U.S. to see the World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
And they're amazed at the serving sizes of our meals and just the plentiful restaurants and Buc-ee's, you know, going to these massive gas stations. I think we lose a lot of the concept of being rich, that we are rich. Even from world standards, people come here and are amazed at how wealthy we are, even though it's just common among us. So when we think about that, yeah, there are very wealthy people around us, but we need to bring it home that we are rich. We don't have just covering and food. We have wealth, just unimaginable wealth, and we need to be careful how we view it and the priorities of it.
Exactly right.
Like, I think we read verse 17, and we're thinking of Elon Musk, but we're all rich. Just look at, compared to the rest of the world, you know, the typical American, even who's lower down on the scale, is very, very blessed. And we should be thankful for that and take these warnings to heart then. Brent?
Proverbs 13:11, wealth gained hastily will dwindle. Okay. He who gathers little by little will increase it. That talks about contentment even in saving money, even in preparing for the future. You have a contentment. You're judicious in how you do it, and you're not going after it all at once. You're content with your life as you prepare.
Okay, yeah.
That's what I get out of it.
Yeah, that's right. You know, my translation says, wealth obtained by fraud dwindles, but the one who gathers it by labor increases it. Just a ton of proverbs about wealth and principles that ought to guide us. That's a good one to connect. Thank you. Okay, anything else so far? Wyatt?
A good Old Testament parallel to 1 Timothy 6:9 is Ecclesiastes 5:10.
Okay.
He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income.
Okay, that's a good one. In fact,
let's go to Ecclesiastes because that's where I was going to head next. Ecclesiastes. We'll start with chapter 5, where Wyatt just quoted. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. While you're turning to Ecclesiastes 5, let me put a quote up on the screen. At a party given by a billionaire on Shelter Island, Kurt Vonnegut informs his pal Joseph Heller that their host, a hedge fund manager, had made more money in a single day than Heller had earned from his wildly popular novel, Catch-22, over its whole history. Heller responds, "Yes, but I have something he will never have enough." Which goes back to that concept of contentment, that I've got enough money. Whatever the dollar amount might be, can I learn contentment? Here in Ecclesiastes, you got Solomon, who has the wealth of people like Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos and those guys. And he's trying to find happiness without God, and he can't do it. And read again what Wyatt quoted, Ecclesiastes 5:10, "He who loves money will not be satisfied with money. Or he who loves abundance with his income. This too is vanity." And we could, you know, whatever material thing, whatever blessings that we enjoy of a physical nature, we could substitute in there. For example, I just got back from vacation. And it was great. We had a good time. But vacation is one of those things where as soon as you're back, you start thinking, oh, I want to go on another vacation. You know, you're never fully satisfied by vacation. And it's the same thing with money. Or cars, or phones, or hunting rifles, or whatever you're into. As soon as I get it, I start thinking about the next one that I would like. And I'm just never fully satisfied. And I will never be fully satisfied with any material thing because what I need ultimately is God. Back up a page or so, Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 10 and 11, where Solomon had been talking about his experimentation, just looking for happiness and fulfillment in the things of the world without God. And it came up lacking, of course. Ecclesiastes 2:10, "All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, For my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. So once again, we can't buy happiness. It's not like if I get the next raise at work, that's when I'll finally be happy, and I'll just automatically be content, or go on some trip, or buy some possession, whatever it is, that's going to make us fulfilled in life. God's the only one who can do that. Serving Him, having the contentment of being in fellowship with God, that's the only way to get it. Contentment has to be learned. It can't be bought. It's not something I can go out and buy, purchase, or earn, or win, or something like that. It's not a physical thing. Okay, let me pause again there. Anything to add so far? Who's that? Kaylin?
I was thinking that fasting might be a good tool to help with this. Like what you just read, all my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I think fasting is the exact opposite of that. Fasting from whatever it may be, food or something that you enjoy spending your money on, or just whatever it is, just practicing just discipline. Because in many ways, we don't really have to be that disciplined in our life. Like, we don't really have to get hungry. We don't have to suffer. And so I think fasting is just practicing that for the sake of curbing desire and focusing more on godly things.
Sure. Yeah, just discipline.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, good. Who else? Okay, here's another quote for you to chew on. Of those making more than $175,000 a year, or roughly the top 10% of tax filers, one quarter said they were either very poor or getting by, but things are tight. Even a share of those making more than $500,000 and $1 million said the same thing. What do you make of that reaction? If I keep increasing my salary, will I get to the point where, okay, I'm good? Apparently not. Yeah, ultimately, it comes back to me, Philippians 4:11, learning to be content. Paul said when he had abundance, and Paul's abundance would have been way less than what you and I have on a normal day. But he said, even in my abundance, or whether I have nothing, I've learned to be content. So we can see how pervasive that thinking is. Most of us think, you know, at the next pay raise, at the next, you know, I get this job, and then and we're chasing it like that, and things are going to be okay. A few more thousand per year, and we'd be okay. Everything would be fine, and I'll be content and happy. And there's nothing wrong with working hard, earning raises, your business doing well, you're prospering. The Bible's not saying that is wrong, but we do have to watch our attitudes. If this is becoming an obsession, where I'm starting to neglect spiritual things, that's where it turns wrong. And it's very easy for that to happen. Teresa, did you ever hear that?
There, in the verse in Ecclesiastes, do you notice how often the word my, me, is used? And that's what I get from people who say this thing about, I'm getting by, you know, on that kind of salary. It's not about you. It's about God, serving God. You are God's servant, and it's not your wealth. It's God's blessings.
Okay, yeah, that's a good way to look at it. This is
God's wealth that I am managing while I'm alive. Good way to view it. Exactly right, Brent.
I'm one of those bad people that watches those YouTube financial things all the time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There's a very interesting study out about people of different wealth levels and what wealth level you have to get to before you quit worrying about the future. 50 million.
50 million?
This study had surveyed 150 millionaires, said 150 million is when they quit worrying about saving for the future.
Okay.
That's crazy to me.
I had seen another study.
I don't have it in my notes today, but it was way less than that. I thought it was like 500,000 or something like that, where people, like, happiness was at 500,000, where you can stop worrying about, can I pay the bills this month or whatever. Interesting, though. Interesting. Sir?
Side, but the thing that, you know, needs to be looked at is the expense side. I mean, you could spend, I don't know, I'm outdated, but, you know, I used to say stuff like you can spend, you know, hundreds of dollars on a fountain pen, you know, or whatever, you know, or Visa, you can spend thousands. So Yeah. If you've got your eyes on expensive things, you'll never have
enough. Right.
You got to look at both sides of it.
And that's why this is so, I don't know, it's such an elusive dream, because the more money we have, more ways we find to spend it. And we just never, well, there's a great quote. I wish I could quote it off the top of my head, but you can never out-earn your ability to spend. You know, and no matter how much money you make, there's something else to spend it on, usually on Amazon. Ma'am?
I was thinking about Luke 12 and, of course, the parable of the man that had his barns and his crops and was so rich and is going to build bigger barns. And again, what Teresa said, it was all about me.
Right.
And God told him, you fool, this very night your soul shall part of you. Now you who will own what you have prepared. And the man that stores up treasure for himself is not rich toward God.
Exactly right.
And that's a good connection there. Jesus responding to that in verse 14, 13 and 14, divide the family inheritance, and Jesus addresses the heart matter that's involved there, the greed that's involved there, getting to the foundation of his thinking. That's a parable, not a real dude, but a real guy. But here's this man. There's nothing wrong with working hard and going out and earning money. That's not what Jesus is getting at. The point is, here's a man that did that and neglected spiritual things, and that's where it turned wrong. And so he's warning about that, warning about greed back in verse 15. So again, like Paul, we have to learn to be content, have to watch our attitudes. I'm climbing the ladder of success, and I may get to the top and realize I've had it, the ladder's leaning against the wrong wall. I should have been over here working on spiritual things. Okay, anything else before we move to our next point, which is going to be this, pay attention to lifestyle creep. Anything else before we do that, sir?
Go down one more verse in Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 11. When goods increase, they
increase food eating.
Okay.
It goes with what we're saying. You get that next job, you get a bigger house, a nicer car. Just like he said, it doesn't matter how much more you may make. Instead of using it for good, you're using it on self.
Okay.
And it really profits nothing. You've done nothing different. You're in the same hole you were in before. So
that's a great point. And
that makes me think. I've done some lessons before on people that win the lottery. And of course, there's this huge amount of money all of a sudden, and then here comes your fifth cousin that you've never heard of, and everything that hey, I need a new truck, and those who consume them increase. So we just find ways to spend. It's just there's always legitimate needs out there, but there's lots of other things too that come along. Sir?
Ecclesiastes 2:18 through 21 gives us good insight of what we have to look forward to. I'll let you read that because I'm...
Okay, you said 18 through 21?
Yes.
Ecclesiastes 2:18, thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who will come after. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor with which I labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. Therefore I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I have labored under the sun. When there is a man who has labored up with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with him, this too is vanity and great evil. Okay, that's a great point. Good connection, what we're just talking about there.
And notice again, Teresa pointed out, there's a lot of I and me in Ecclesiastes. And you notice there about three times, I think, under the sun. And I think it's like 30 times in the book of Ecclesiastes where you find that phrase, under the sun. He's talking about life on earth, not with a heavenly perspective, but just life on earth without God. And you see how miserable that outlook is without God in the equation. Okay, well, let's think about this. Pay attention to lifestyle creep. Look in Deuteronomy chapter 6, please. Over the history of the world, as economies and technology innovations have flourished, we've grown accustomed to bigger and better things. And certainly in America, that's been maybe more accelerated than anywhere else. Each generation enjoys newer, nicer things, more luxuries, more conveniences. And even in our own lives, in our own lifespan, we typically advance in our careers, we make a little more money, we start spending a little more, we start enjoying nicer things. And so that's what I'm referring to when I say lifestyle creep, that we just try to, or we tend to, you know, enjoy nicer things as time goes on. So imagine this. Let's say all of us in here are going to move to a new neighborhood together. We're going to move out of our houses, and we're going to move to this new neighborhood of houses. And in these houses, there are no air conditioners, which is not a big deal because there's no electricity in the houses either, which means also there's no Wi-Fi, and there's no indoor plumbing, and several other things. If there's any furniture in them, it's either very basic furniture or possibly broken furniture. Okay, so just imagine, we're all going to move into these houses next week, okay? And then someone comes and gives us a stern warning to say, when you move into those houses, I don't want you to be so distracted by that luxury that you forget about God. What would you say? You say, I don't think that's going to happen. Don't worry. I don't think we're going to be spoiled by houses with no plumbing or electricity or anything else. Okay, Deuteronomy 6, that's exactly what happened. Verse 10, then it shall come about when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses, there's the houses we're talking about, full of all good things, which you did not fill. Not electricity, though, not indoor plumbing like we've got. Hewn cisterns, they did have that, which you did not dig. Vineyards and olive trees, which you did not plant. And you eat and are satisfied. Then watch yourself that you do not forget the Lord who brought you up from the land of Egypt out of the house of slavery. So is our perspective a little bit different from their perspective? They're going from tents to houses. Rudimentary houses compared to what we live in today. And the warning from Moses was, watch yourself. You'll get spoiled by these nice houses. You're living in this land. You don't even have to build those things. You conquer the people and you live in their houses. And watch out. Don't forget that this is a blessing from God. So if that doesn't show us the perspective and the lifestyle creep that has happened over generations to get to us today, I don't know what would. You know, he's warning them about the temptation to forget God. So what about us? I mean, the luxury in which we live is incredible, incredible. And so if they were warned, I mean, multiply it by a million, that's how seriously we should take that warning for us. Okay, turn to Matthew chapter 16. Any other comments, questions as we're going along? Matthew 16. It'd be hard to imagine July without air conditioning. Matthew 16, verse 24, then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Okay, let's understand Jesus here. He's not saying it's necessarily sinful, even if you did gain the whole world, if that was possible for one person. The problem, again, is if you forfeit your soul in doing that. The attitude toward the money. That's, again, that's what the focus is. Nothing wrong in and of itself with the fact that new things have been invented, that we're able to afford a number of these things. We live in a prosperous country. We count that as a blessing from God. That's a wonderful thing. And we can afford many conveniences and luxuries. We probably all drove here today. We're sitting here in an air-conditioned building. We count those as blessings from God. The problem is, if we let that distract us from spiritual matters, we violated all these warnings. And so it just helps us to simply be aware, just to be aware, to try to be aware of how blessed we are, how focused we ought to be on spiritual things, even though we live in this lap of luxury. Here's a quote that maybe will give us some perspective. Median family income adjusted for inflation was $29,000 in 1955. Now notice, this is adjusted for inflation already. Median family income, the middle of the stack, $29,000 in 1955. In 2019, it was just over $62,000. We've used that wealth to live a life hardly conceivable to the 1950s American, even for a median family. The median American home increased from 983 square feet in 1950 to 2,400 square feet in 2018. The average new American home now has more bathrooms than occupants. Our cars are faster and more efficient. Our TVs are cheaper and sharper. Okay, well, what do you think about that? This is saying, look, even in America, compared with just a few decades ago, look how much things have come up. We're just getting used to nicer things. How many people are buying homes that are 983 square feet? It's hard to find one. They're not building many of those, I don't think. If so, I don't know where they are because I see the billboards of, you know, the neighborhoods being built and they're bigger than that. Sir?
Owning, but in the access. You know, back then, you only had access to so much. So for information, for instance, if you wanted to know something and you didn't have a book for it, you had to go to a library and then you researched it and you found that the book that you need to get that information is not in the library, so you get it on loan from another library. Trust me, that's how we used to do that. And now you just open up your laptop or get on your desktop or just your phone and Google it, and the information is right there. Of course, you have to filter different sources to see which one you trust the most, but the access is there. Money. You might not have the money, but and this is one of those things that is telling on one of your previous slides. Some people get way undisciplined at this, but if you don't have access and you need immediate funds, you can get a loan. You don't have the money, but you can have access to the money. The bank owns it, but and you have to pay it back. So we have more access than what we had ownership back 60 years ago.
Yeah, things have just changed dramatically, just within a few decades, and who knows where they're going. The Lord knows. Any other comments, ma'am?
It was hard to imagine living through July without air conditioning. I'm sure there's a lot of people in this audience grew up without air conditioning.
Yeah, yeah.
And we survived. We're here.
Yeah. Okay.
I wish Brother Jenkins was here to talk about growing up on his farm and that story he used to tell about the donkey. I forget exactly what it was, but they had to sell a donkey or something, and him being so sad as a boy watching that donkey leave, because I guess he probably had to do a lot of the work now that donkey had been doing. But our perspective today, you know, young people today listen to that story and think, what in the world is he talking about? And things have just changed. We're just not used to that anymore. And speaking of things we're not used to, I got a couple of hands, but think about this. The entire concept of being entitled to retirement is at most two generations old. Before World War II, most Americans worked until they died. So think about that. I mean, the thing now is, you know, you work, you're trying to save, trying to get into a 401k at your job or an IRA or something and retire and be on a cruise somewhere, you know, when I'm 65 or whatever. And just that concept is apparently new. This is a chart showing the decades past. I didn't know they were collecting this data back in 1880, but apparently they were. 78% of men 65 and older were still working at that time. And you can see how that's gone down in the more recent decades to fewer and fewer of those guys at that age who are still working, because we have this concept and the ability to retire, the enough savings and investments that we can just stop working and just live off the money that we've invested or saved over the years, which was not a concept a few decades ago. Todd?
Early, thank you.
What's that?
I was a slide early. You got me.
Oh, okay. You were going to talk about that sort of thing? Ed, you had your hand up too.
No, I was pointing.
Oh, you were pointing back to him. Okay.
It's just, you know, we have to face it. As we talk about money, that we're living in a prosperous nation. The modern standard of living is just really, really high. It's getting better every year. The wrong way to respond is to start putting our trust and hope in that, in all these physical blessings. We count them as blessings. We're glad we have them. None of us want to give up our air conditioners if we can help it. But we recognize our hope, our contentment ultimately comes from God himself. Okay, what does it mean to live within your means? What does that phrase mean? What is that talking? Is that a biblical concept? Is it good? Is it bad? What are we talking about when we hear people say that? Ma'am?
I've been budgeting a long time. I'm kind of old. But you take your income and you figure out how much you have to spend now and how much you have to lay aside for future expenditures. But first, what goes to God? And then what are current expenditures? And then things that are going to hit you, like house insurance or car insurance. So you set aside each money and save it. So that you're thinking, when you do that budget, not about today, but about tomorrow and preparation.
Okay, all right, exactly
right. You know, and if the dollars aren't there, then the lifestyle gets cut. You live within your means. You don't stretch to say, well, I want to live this way, and I've got this much money. It just doesn't work that way, sir.
It's also, whenever you talked about going up different pay levels, perhaps, I know for me, you know, going from a kid didn't make anything, and you just get it from your parents, and then you get older and you start working maybe a little part-time job and you get into internships and maybe full-time jobs, you start making more and more. In my experience, it's hard because going into it, you think, oh, well, especially in regards to, well, what do you give to the church? Oh, well, I'm making so much more now. I can give so much more. But then when the money actually hits the account and you realize, oh, wow, I can do so much with this, it's easy to, okay, I know I said this, that I'm going to give this to the church before, but I'll take a little bit more of that. I'll also give some. But, and how much you give, that's not what I'm trying to say, but the idea that, okay, well, maybe sometimes if we want to have a lifestyle that as we planned and as we thought in our heart what we want to give, it might not fit that. We might cut some of our first fruits to fund that lifestyle.
Okay. And
at least that's a temptation of mine, at least.
That's a good test of the heart
is to where my priorities are there, ma'am.
Recently that reminded me that God doesn't necessarily look at the amount I give, but maybe what I retain and why I retain it and what I plan to do with what I retain.
Okay. Makes me think of the widow and the two mites and so forth.
Okay. Mom?
David, you might remember me telling you and my kids that my mom grew up during the Depression. She was born the year the Depression started in 1929, so all she knew was to be poor. And she had three siblings, and one Christmas, all they got was one ball to share between the four of them. And they were just so happy to have that ball to play with, you know?
Yeah.
Because they weren't used to having things.
Get a ball
to share.
For a good gift right there. I've heard of some folks from that generation that would get a piece of fruit, like an orange for the birthday or Christmas or whatever, and happy to get it. Yeah. So different perspectives again. And Grandma, by the way, later in life, hoarded snacks for the grandkids. So we'd go over there and she'd say, get in there, get you some chocolate milk or whatever. Yeah. And maybe it was because she'd grown up with so little, she was trying to do what she could for us. Let me put another quote up here. Consumer research shows the average citizen saw about 500 ads each day back in the 1970s, but that number has now swelled to about 5,000 ads per day. This is another factor in this lifestyle creep is the amount of advertisements we're seeing and the goal to create a need that advertisers have. We say, oh, I need this. You know, I thought I was doing good, but I didn't know that product existed. So, it's hard. It's hard. And I've put this before. Some of these we talked about recently in an FNE, so you might remember this one. In 2009, Sports Illustrated estimated that 78% of NFL players were broke or in deep financial stress within 2 years after retirement, and that 60% of NBA players were broke within 5 years. What's your reaction to that? Why? How can that happen? Here's guys that are professional athletes, football or basketball. They're making, the league minimums are hundreds of thousands. Some of them make millions. The superstars make tens of millions. But even if you're at the league minimum, several hundred thousand a year, and, you play for 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever, and then you retire, and within 2 years, most of them are broke. How do we explain that? If you had to guess, I don't have any follow-up info there. If you had to guess, what's happening?
I've seen many times a kid gets a signing bonus, And then takes that signing bonus as the 20% deposit on a big mansion, a complex, basically, and fills the garages with the fastest vehicles known to man. And only a little bit of it's paid for, but they're in debt, way in debt, more than if they were MVP for the rest of their lives, they'd never make enough money to pay it off. Lack of discipline.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a dangerous thing.
And it's amazing. I've seen that stat in different forms over the years, and it's real. And it, and you think, how in the world? These people are making so much money. How can you be broke that fast?
I guess the last couple of weeks in the Wall Street Journal about high school kids that are getting these, I guess they're paying them already by December before they graduate.
Athletes,
and they're spending, and the article was showing that they're spending like $100,000 on their prom, going to their prom. And they show pictures of all the stuff, the clothes they buy, the car, they sometimes buy the car just to go, you know.
Wow.
And they're spending this much money in high school now. It's an amazing article. It's
wow.
Mind-boggling.
Wow.
Are they going to be broke?
To have that wealth
at that young of age, really hard to manage it in a wise way. Keith?
All about the excess. They're ignorant. They're ignorant of their finances. You get into a situation where that's thrust upon you and they haven't been taught to be good stewards of their money. Sometimes it's not the fancy cars and everything else. It's they don't remember that, hey, 35% of that's going to go to the state. More than that if you're in California or New York or other places. You lose track of it. You're not a good steward of your money. And to realize that, you know, hey, I'm going to, you read of guys who make league minimums are going to move into a $300,000 or $400,000 home and they still lose it because they're ignorant of the situation. They're not, they need to focus on what being good stewards of what they've been given, to focus on managing their money well. And then there's contentment as well, which we've been talking about.
It's amazing. And so here's an example. It's like an extreme example. We look at professional athletes and the big salaries. Now, let's look at us. Don't we do the same sort of thing, just with fewer zeros in the numbers? You know, our salaries are not as big, but we also get ourselves into financial binds. I don't have stats to put up right now, but, you know, how many foreclosures are there? How many of this and that that we get ourselves into plenty of binds also, not being professional athletes. And sometimes it's, you know, medical emergency. I think that's the number one reason people declare bankruptcies today is you go to the hospital and have this huge surgery and nobody can afford that and the insurance gets messed up or whatever. But sometimes we just do it to ourselves where we just spend so much and the income is just not there. There's no way it could be there. And we look at these guys and rightfully so and say, look, here's the lifestyle they're trying to live. Then they retire, and the income goes down to something normal, and they can't keep the same lifestyle. And so within a couple of years, they're broke. And we do the same sort of thing where we just swell that lifestyle so big, it just goes way past what we can afford. And not to mention the focus in our minds that most of the time is going to be lost because we're just focused on pursuing that material wealth instead of spiritual work. Okay, any other comments, questions, sir?
Or you mentioned how many things are available now versus back then. And, you know, to get a loan, you know, it's probably a lot easier maybe, especially the housing bubble in the 2000s was because banks were forced to give loans to people who couldn't pay. And sure enough, next thing you know, they couldn't pay. So, you know, even though you might get a loan, you need to consider whether, you know, you can afford.
Yeah. It's
I just listened to an audiobook on the way home the other day, and they were talking about where credit cards came from, and I think it was the 1950s. And there was a guy that had forgotten his wallet and went to a restaurant, forgot his wallet, had to call his wife to come pay the bill, and was really embarrassed by that, and came up with this idea, well, what if, you know, I put it on the tab? So there was a diner's card or something, and then that, you know, has become what it is today with credit cards. And those early decades, it was still, there was like shame. Maybe somebody can remember this. It was a little bit embarrassing to have a loan or to use a credit card. Not anymore. We're way past that now. And the average family is dealing with a lot of credit card debt. So things change. So part of our class here, we're trying to get back to these Bible principles and recognize, first of all, how blessed we are. How the focus needs to be on spiritual things, no matter what our level of wealth is. And we need to really be careful about starting to focus on increasing my lifestyle so much that my focus is lost or I get myself into huge financial trouble. Somebody named Bill Earle said, when your outgo exceeds your income, your upkeep will be your downfall. Let that one sink in there for a second. About a minute left. Any final comments, questions before we close? Sister Smith.
Maybe James 1:13-18 could apply to this too with money.
James 1:13-18. Let no one say when he is tempted, I'm being tempted by God. Am I in the right passage there? Okay. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone, but each one is tempted when he's carried away and enticed by his own lust. And when lust is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren, but every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. In the exercise of his will, he brought us forth by the word of truth so that we would be a kind of first fruits among his creatures.
Time from God, the blessings we get. We're his first fruit creatures. We're supposed to use it for good. As much as we can, because that like you said, he's loaned it to us.
Yeah.
We're managing his wealth is to be used as a tool for his glory.
Enticed with your own desires, and that's part of the problem. We desire something, and we try to find a way to get it.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Enticed by his own lust. I mentioned Amazon earlier. We can do a lot of lusting on Amazon, lusting for material goods, and any other shopping website. Okay, we'll plan to pick this back up next week. Thank you for your participation this morning.